Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
From Under the Rock Studios in Los Angeles, California, this is The Strange Chameleon Show, a podcast with style, soul, and sarcasm, along with laughter, love, and listen. Follow them now on iTunes. I promise you won't, you will be entertained.
Welcome to the Strange Chameleon Show.
Welcome.
Oh, it's about that time.
We have a 2017 SAG-AFTRA presidential runner, Pete Antico, in the house.
Pete Antico.
Hey.
Welcome to the Strange Chameleon Show.
How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for being here. And now, back in 2017, just a little bit of history for our listeners.
Yeah.
You are a stuntman, actor, writer, producer, director. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. And back in 2017, you did run for SAG-AFTRA.
President.
To be a president of SAG-AFTRA. And you were endorsed by several celebrities.
Lots of them.
Yeah. Sylvester Stallone, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Cuba Gooding Jr. Mr. Mayhem.
Andrew Dice Clay, Mickey Rourke, Vinny Pastor, Ray. I think I had more endorsements on camera than any president in the history of SAG. But
nice.
I had some very kind people. I mean, Jeff Fahey. There's so many. Russell Peters. We were at a show at the Microsoft Center. Like packs the house. 7,000 people. He packs stadiums in Europe. Quite a brilliant comedian. But Mike Madsen. I mean, all the people that like stand up for ethics and principles and mm-hmm. values.
Mm-hmm. And now I know that. So there, one of the things that you were mainly running for and that you believed it was in regards to the pension plan.
Yes. I mean, the difference is that, we have a pension plan. I mean, in like across the country, if you're a policeman or a fireman, you get a full pension after 20 years. The staff members get pension after 20 years, and the members, I mean, I'm a 40-year member. I can't get a full pension. And I could have made double the money of the staff member, and I still can't get a full pension. Well, the thing is that, we have a great staff. There's a lot of really good people that work for us. And what the difference is that around the year of 2007, 2008, we had a financial crisis, and things shifted, in the plan. And we get 3.5% of an accrual rate. That's what all performers got, and the staff got the same. And a little history, because the staff, we gave the staff our pension in around 2001, because it would have been cost effective for us to put them on our own plan. And the SAG members actually pay for that. All our dues, we pay the staff's pension. That's where they get paid from.
Okay.
So in 2008, after the financial crisis happened, they moved down the SAG after members to 2% accrual, and they left the staff at 3.5%, which, a lot of people think that may be self-dealing, because why would the people that work there allow themselves to have a 1.5% more accrual rate? And their pension caps are $210,000 a year.
Wow.
The members' pension caps are $96,000. Why are the members' caps, less than half of the staff? And we gave it to them. So, to me, it should be fair and ethical. We should have equal pensions.
Yeah.
And in this financial environment, it's tough. There's got to be some kind of happy medium where either ours gets brought up or theirs gets brought down, so it could be fiscally responsible. Because, the difference between SAG and AFTRA are tenfold. SAG's pension plan, you could work for 5 different networks, and your cap is $225,000 per employer.
Okay.
Per year.
That's the max.
So if you made $1 million with 5 different employers, mm-hmm. You can considerably you can still make $20,000. That's 20 grand towards your pension. After is different. After you can only, it's capped out at 200,000 per year, period. So if you made $1 million in AFTRA, their accrual rate is 0.86. That means you're making $1,720 per year. So they're vastly different. One is vastly financially superior, and one is vastly financially inferior. So an ERISA law, which is the law that governs pensions, would never allow SAG's pension to merge with AFTRA's pension because they're so structurally different that it just, it wouldn't work. And the ERISA law is designed to protect members' pension. But it's different because, you know, we have a blessing that the bond market is going up now because mostly the pension plan is invested in bonds, which protects us further. And even though the markets are high, like in 2008, we lost like 20%. And I have some questions about, you know, how we lost the 20%, though our pension did better than most. Our managers, you know, did better. But if you're just investing in bonds, you know, and the rates are depending on what year, if it's a 1 year, 3 year, you know, 5 year, 10 year, or a 30 year bond, the interest rates are quite consistent. There's not much risk on the up or a downside. It's basically designed to protect a lot of people's money, so it's pretty conservative.
Okay.
Which is normal. Mm-hmm. They're not gonna go invest in some derivative, you know, yak futures in Guam that, you know, hey, we can really make a lot of money here.
Yeah.
It's conservative. So, in that space, you know, they've done a decent job. However, you know, I actually think that the money management over there should take a look at some more protective or defensive investments like gold and silver, you know, energy, oil, natural gas, water, agriculture, and utilities, because these particular types of companies, like everyone needs electricity for their house, everyone needs natural gas, everyone needs oil, everyone needs heating and air conditioning and electricity. These things run your home. So if you're investing in utilities that pay dividends, you know, if the utility goes down, it's compounded, you reinvest it and create more shares. And then when it goes back up, you leverage more money. It's called compounding. But there's a lot of ways that you can protect it. And one of my biggest humble criticisms, I believe the plan should be invested 10% in gold, like Ray Dalio or John Einhorn or John Paulson, the biggest hedge fund managers in the world, have this protection, you know, 10%. It's just like an insurance policy. It protects you against inflation and deflation. Mm-hmm. And I've been a proponent of asking Michael Estrada and David White. David White's is the National Executive Director of SAG, but he's also on the board of the pension, and Michael Estrada is the head of the pension. And so I always politely send them information about why and where and who's investing in this and the history of finance in regards to it to protect members' plans, because multi-employer plans are better, but they're not bulletproof, because the Teamsters, if you look at their plan, it's the same as ours, a multi-employer, and they're about out of money. And that's because one of their main contributors years back pulled out. So, you know, and how do you deal with it? You have wonderful families that have been working for 30 and 40 years, and what, they're not going to get, you know, their pension? I mean, you can see in 2008 and 9, United Airlines, they lost half of their pension. You know, GM, General Motors, you have the United Auto Workers. I mean, you have families across the country, and then you have the PBC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And if you look up their finance, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation is $65 billion in the deficit. So if they had a pension crisis or a big financial crisis and the pensions couldn't be paid, you know, they'd be lucky if they were able to pay 10% or 10 cents on the dollar. So it's not very good. It's like the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation in the banking system. Mm-hmm. The FDIC is underfunded. If there was a financial crisis in the U.S., they would be able to recoup 2 cents on the dollar. So for every dollar you had, they would reimburse you 2 cents.
Okay.
That's why it's much better to be to park your money in credit unions or brokerage houses like Fidelity, which is a private investment house, private. It's not on the open market. Or Schwab, which is a commercial house, but it is very, very conservative and very, very safe. If you have your money in there, you have something called SIPC insurance that insures you up to $500,000 in cash, which is much safer than being in the banking system. So, you know, these kinds of things are good. And My recommendations would be to investigate, because the plan, the earnings are now split, because before, when we just had SAG before the merger, SAG earnings would just go to your plan, mm-hmm. SAG. Now that SAG and AFTRA have merged, you see, one of the lies about merger was it was going to fix split earnings. That was completely false, because you know it, now the split earnings are codified. So if you're working the contracts, there's 43% on certain shows, that 43% of your income, no matter where you work, and there's a formula, it goes to AFTRA, and 57% goes to SAG.
Okay.
But there's a formula, like hour shows and half hour shows are divided, and they're done economically. But so since I've been doing this a long time, if you're a newer performer, in 10 years, it's going to take you twice as long to get a max pension. If you even get one, it'll be very difficult because the earnings are split. So what I propose is to have a voluntary contribution added. So if you're working on a show, on a SAG show, and you want to say, I want an extra 2% of my check to go towards my pension only, not anybody else's. Because right now, when they're split, you get a certain amount that goes to yours, and you're funding other people's pensions. So
off your paycheck. Wow.
So it's not like if you're doing it, it all goes to you because they're split. Because if not, one would go BK. They go bankrupt. Sorry.
Got it.
And it's tough because AFTRA's plan, they're except for like Chick Hearn, who is a voice of the Lakers, or Gary Owens. I mean, I think there's maybe three people in the history of AFTRA that would have maxed out because, and according to their structure, you would have had to make $200,000 a year consistently for 60 years straight to get a max pension.
Wow.
Who does that in AFTRA?
Right. I
mean, 60 years straight? So it's virtually impossible to get, you know, a complete pension. So, you know, we're fighting. We believe that actors, performers, should get the same pension as our good staff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not asking for anything more. We have great people that work for us. And, you know, some of them have been there a long time and very conscientious. And, you know, I appreciate, and the membership should appreciate, people that actually know our contract law, because what happens is many, many times in the past, we've had great lawyers and great people, and all of a sudden they work for 4 or 5 years. They get really, really good at what they do. And then some studio pays them 2 or 3 times the money and they leave. And it's a matter of economics for them, but it's not good for us because they know what we do and they fight against us. So that's a problem. And that's a big problem. So the way to do these things is to start implementing, you know, non-circumvention agreements or non-compete clause, my apologies. So, and I don't think that law is applicable in California. So you need to hire people out of different states that law is in play. So the non-compete. So if you get pulled out by another company, you can't work for a competing company for 3 years. There's got to be protections. We have to start running SAG-AFTRA more business savvy. And the issue is that we need to start creating a business model that actually generates income and is fair to the employee or the SAG-AFTRA member.
Right.
And we're on strike now, I want to say, to BBH. We had an incredible turnout, probably 1,500 people, led by Jane Austen, and who's the LA president, who did a phenomenal idea and a phenomenal job, along with the local board, which I am a part of, at SAG-AFTRA in Hollywood. We organized, you know, and brought out 1,500 people and went out and marched and picketed against BBH. And BBH is a company that owns the Prodigies Group, and they own Leo Burnett, and they own Saatchi & Saatchi, which are big, huge commercial companies that all are signed by our contracts. They all of a sudden decided they just didn't want to honor the contract, which is against federal labor law. So that issue has been being dealt with legally. So it's actually a place to start where this big company, this mothership company, BBH, is trying to break our union. Because if the union, if this contract doesn't work and they're successful, it's going to be like a Netflix model, because a Netflix model, the residuals are horrible. The salaries, you know, are not very good. I mean, you'd rather work on network television because you're getting, you know, a full residual package. If you work at Netflix, you used to get paid after a year, and it's minimal. It's minimal. Now it got increased. They want to pay you on a quarterly basis. But the amount of money you're making is de minimis compared to network television. So the problem is that we have more work on more platforms all across the board with Netflix and Amazon and all of these different little new media channels. But the new media contracts are basically given away. And there's, you can't make money there. There's people working for $125 a day, $250 a day. I mean, $125 a day is like minimum wage.
Yeah.
And you're going to be a performer. I mean, who wants to work for that? So, and your pension and health contributions is nothing.
Yeah.
When you do that. But economically, we made more money. SAG-AFTRA brought in more money, I think last year, than most years that we've been in business. So, but the difference is, the concentration of that money used to be fewer members. Now it's a much, much wider range of members because more people are working on more platforms with more content, making less money. So all those people that make this money pay a small amount of money in the pension plan, probably don't make enough to earn healthcare. But since we have a subsidization system, because you know, it's not like an RSP where you every dime you pay when since you're 20 or when you start goes into your pension. If you don't make enough money to qualify for a pension credit, the money you earn goes to fund everyone else's pension that is on one. And it's the same thing with the healthcare system. If you don't make the $17,100 to qualify for plan two and you make $4,000 or $8,000 or $10,000, your money's going in there to fund other people's health plans. It's subsidization. That's the way it works. So it's been that way for a long time, and everything is subsidized. So if you want to, you know, there's just a better way. And I believe that if you have a self-made contribution where you can do that, then you can enrich your pension, which it would be better, you know, to do it that way. And I also think they should probably try to implement this with the health plan. If in the health plan, you should be able to increase your contribution if you get a salary and you want to donate more of your money so you can qualify. I think that should be an option as well. So these are the kinds of things that I'm proposing in to protect, you know, the performer. And then the other thing that needs to be said is that there needs to be more transparent lines of communication between our leadership and the membership, because, you know, when they put out a contract, they send postcards, many of them that you've got in the mail, vote yes, and the national board recommends this. Now, if the national board recommends it 80%, that means there's 20% dissent and then 80% of the board. The problem is that whatever political party's in power puts that game forward, it's like the Democrats and the Republicans. So if one political party believes in it and I can prove that it's economically not sound to do this, it doesn't matter. You're outvoted and the members don't get the best service. But the only way this could get remedied is if there was a real pro and a con statement on every contract. See, our rules are if 25% of the board votes no, they have to put out a minority report or a con statement. I personally don't think that's fair. I think it should be a pro and a con statement on every contract. Here's the benefits. Here are the detriments. Make up your mind.
Right.
Give the member a choice. Because I don't believe in people thinking for me. I don't believe in people thinking for any of you.
Right.
So you should be able to make up your own mind. And if you have a question, you should have a place to go and talk to some of these people that are serving you on the boards. Ask different people different questions, and whatever makes the most sense to you that you believe would protect you, great. Because if I ask most members, well, how are the residuals holding up for you as compared to 5 years ago, as compared to 10 years ago? That answer is they're going down, 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 and almost non-existent.
So, down.
So we need a better new media contracts.
Yeah.
And I'm not a proponent of what was negotiated. I think we could have done better, much better. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't even negotiate cable TV, which was a $60 billion business in transition.
Wow.
And we let that...
Where's my money?
I know. But we let that contract go.
Okay.
So
how did that come about? Do you know
the... Well, look, everything is political. Like, okay. we have... And I'm going to say this because, look, I've been a very powerful opponent of some of the people that have been in power, but they're all divine human beings and they must be honored first as human beings. If I disagree with someone's view, I will attack that view and not that being. Look, when 5 years ago, I was much more, I want to say, intellectually abrasive, where I could rip someone's view apart, but I did it condescendingly, which is not good.
Right.
But when you, but it doesn't matter if you're right. It doesn't matter. But if you want to do it, you have to do it from a place of kindness. And that's one thing that I'm committed to doing now. So everyone on that national board at SAG-AFTRA who I have fought against, they're wonderful people because they're actually donating so many hours of their time and try, and I believe all of them are trying to make a difference. But in order for all of us to do it as a collective, we have to stop fighting. We have to use science. In other words, let's discuss things based upon facts. So here's the economic facts. This is what Netflix is earning. Ooh, you're on, and this is their forward guidance for a year. This is what Amazon's earning. This is what Apple is earning. And this is what Hulu is earning. Okay, based upon that, let's make up our mind what we believe a fair piece of the advertising dollar or on streaming services and pay services, it's different. If they're making X amount of dollars, we should be able to figure out economically what a fair share is. And respectfully, if the top, you know, 12 CEOs in media conglomerates, if in total, you know, they're making $64 million a year. I mean, I remember in 3 years, the our contract, that they were making about $190 million a year, and the last contract, not in 2017, but in 2014, when I stated this fact, I mean, our contract was worth $200 million, and SAG-AFTRA was saying, hey, it's a great, we did great. I said, no, you didn't factor in the rate of inflation because you can't figure out a win. You don't make $200 million and call it a gain unless you figure out inflation into that and the cost of living, because everything is about the purchasing power of a dollar. So if you make $200 million more, and that $200 million in raises, alleged raises, doesn't buy you more goods and services as it could in the 3 years prior, then you've gained nothing. And they don't say this truth at SAG-AFTRA, and it needs to be this needs to be more transparent.
They need to implement it into their
new
members.
Well, I argued the point that I didn't like the last contract because they said we made $250 million, and I jumped up and said it's not true because you have to factor in the rate of inflation. Let's see what we really got. How much goods and services in the open market, whether it be milk, eggs, cars, tuition to school,
right?
How much more of the value can you get with this raise, if any, than you could in 2014? If the answer it's even, you've got nothing. If it's less than, you've got nothing. And they go by the government's rate of inflation, which is tame, like 2%. But there's a lot of much more economic minds, because the government always changes the metric. If they use the same rate of inflation, the metrics 30 years ago, we'd probably be looking at 8 or 10% inflation, because you have to include food, energy, and food and energy is not included. But you eat food every day and you heat your house or air condition your house every day.
Right.
It's ridiculous not to have that in. So you need food, energy, and the basket. It's like a basket of things. Like you have cotton, milk, eggs, you know, lean hogs, and you're talking orange juice, and then, you know, gold, silver, energy, oil. All of these are commodities. Soybeans. So I remember corn and soybeans at one time. Soybeans 3 years ago went up 20%. So if you factor all of this in economically, then you can figure out really what the rate of inflation is and make a better economic decision when you're negotiating a contract. So that is, you know, that's my feeling on this. And the pension, you know, they have to, you know, figure this out, because it's 78% funded. That is considered in the danger zone. However, according to the rules of our pension, if they state that the economists say that over the next 10 years that they believe our pension will be enriched, in other words, it will be better funded in the next 10 years on a scale going upward, then they could say it's not in the endangered zone. So what they're saying is that their analysts are saying that we'll, in this economic environment, that the plan should be funded at 100% in 10 years. I respectfully disagree with that emphatically, because all of the major economists and money managers, including Ray Dalio, who our pension uses, or David Einhorn, or you can look at Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or any of the major houses.
Right.
And I mean, John Paul Tudor, you can look at these economic minds, John Paulson, you can look at it, and all of them say, well, we're 10 years into a bull market in stocks, and the main cycle's at 7 years at a time. So we're 3 years overdue for a recession. We haven't even had a 10% correction. So, and the bottom line is that the Federal Reserve kept printing money because in order to get us out of the crisis, they print billions and billions and billions of dollars. And if they didn't do that, yeah, the market probably would have went down to 4,500. But once it settled and all the companies that were overlevered, they would have went bankrupt and other companies would have bought them up, which is the way the free market's supposed to work. Mm-hmm. But what they did is they kicked the can down the road and they kept printing money. And the more you print money, it's like if you had a Rolex and they only make 30,000 a year, that it keeps its value. You start influxing it and making 100 or 200,000 of them, the value of that watch then would come down.
I see.
So the more you print money, the less value it has. And since 1913, the U.S. dollar has been devalued 97%.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah.
That's an economic fact.
Yeah, that's
fact.
A fact.
No, for sure. Yeah. That is a fact. It's an economic fact, actually.
Economic fact. And I know that you've also discussed a little bit about the Unite for Strength and SAG-AFTRA. Would you say meddling in that a little bit, or did I read that wrong?
No, it's not meddling. There's two. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Hello.
Okay. Testing.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
There's two political factions in SAG-AFTRA, mm-hmm. and it's sad because we really shouldn't have any. It should be based upon, you know, ethics, principles, morals, values, integrity, honesty, and trust. And the two political factions are one called Membership First and the other one's called Unite for Strength. So I think they've been feuding for a long time over policy and over, you know, the merger, because the Membership First didn't believe that there should be a merger. They thought it would be damaging for the members. And I was in that camp, and Unite for Strength thought the opposite. So no matter what I thought, and I have a lot of economics to believe that nothing was transparent at that time, and I believe the members were cajoled into merging based upon a myopic bit of information, because I believe if they would have had all the economic facts and they understood that our pension plan was embezzled for millions of dollars and no one told them that, and nobody said that AFTRA was close to bankruptcy. No,
whoa.
Nobody said that. I mean, AFTRA had 11,000 members on their books that didn't exist and listed as dues paying. So if they would have provided a qualified audit or a forensic audit on this and it would have come out, then I'm just saying you could have said voted yes or no, but the members should have had all the information to make an educated vote. And I don't believe they were given the opportunity to do so. However, having said that, and people can debate me on that, but I'll pull up the LM2s, which are the financial statements, and you know, you could show them and it came out in a Pricewaterhouse investigation or audit. But the difference is that what people don't understand is unqualified audits. And I've had a difference of opinion with Duncan Crabtree, but I'm certainly going to prove him wrong because I have some material I'm going to send him in this regard. An unqualified audit doesn't mean it's a bad audit. It just means that they go in and they look for anything that's deficient, or they look for any red flags. But if you're handed books, you could be handed books all day long and they look right. So they rubber stamp them. They say, this is okay. But mind you, in the 10, 12 years of SAG-AFTRA's pension, where we were embezzled by a guy named Karimi Nadar for several million dollars, which insurance company paid back. But we don't really know how deep it goes, in my opinion, because it was never qualified. For not it to be qualified, that means after you find a loophole or a deficiency, you then have to qualify it and match banking records with the years of tax returns and every debit and every credit to make sure the numbers light up. Because if the money got siphoned or used, or there was payouts or money that got hidden somewhere, they would find it because it's forensic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So we never had a forensic audit in the last 10 years. And there was two embezzlements that, well, the last one was in 17 for, I don't know, $756,000. And the Department of Justice said that some of the pension trustees misappropriated funds and spent them on personal items and a lot of things that they weren't allowed to do. SAG-AFTRA denied it. And
Maseratis. And,
not Maseratis. But
big mansion homes.
No, I like to be fair both sides.
No, I'm just kidding.
SAG-AFTRA's attorneys denied it. The Department of Justice is on the other side of that argument.
Right.
So if we've had several embezzlements, and then we had an AFTRA, a guy, embezzled Rubio, I think, I got to remember his name, but a little over $3 million. And all this was under the auspices of getting yearly audits. So this is classic evidence that the audits that they do are inefficient. We don't know what was taken because they were never qualified. And a qualified audit is infinitely better. And a qualified audit can be used in a court of law, and it has legal standing. An unqualified audit has no legal standing. So if I'm Pricewaterhouse and I audit you, if there's a problem with it and I missed something that cost you millions, I can't be held responsible.
Okay.
So there's a big difference. I believe in more financial accountability, and I think SAG-AFTRA, they're doing their best, and I think they should be run more like a business, because in my platform, and I still believe this, you know, we should be a community. We should be like Google. We should have a Google complex, not a SAG-AFTRA with it's us and them. We should have a beautiful place with a cafeteria, with
waterfalls.
Waterfalls. But listen, voiceover booths. We should have we should have little miniature sound stages. We should have a place, a lounge. We should have computers where actors and performers can type resumes. Mm-hmm. We should have camera booths where people can send their auditions and email them off. We should have a.
Oh,
we
I
should
love all these ideas.
We should have a space where actors can rehearse.
Yeah.
A space with a bunch of pads where stunt people can go practice their stuff and shoot it for pre-visualizations, to do different concepts. We should have a SAG-AFTRA theater, like a Broadway 500 seat theater, that's built with a billboard that we put the plays, we hire them. We should start marketing and merchandising our actors just like Apple does. We should have apps with different voices of actors and t-shirts and hats and paraphernalia like the NFL. We should really start branding and marketing our trade and providing entertainment
to it.
Yeah. Right. And listen, my idea was to listen, if we were going to do that, we could get a space, and for $100 a year, my idea was we can get it's a write off. We get a key card. Every member that's in LA, or we do one in Atlanta, we do one in New York. We create a space. Every member there pays $100. They get a key card. That's for the year.
Got
so 24 hours a day, you can go into this acting community where there should be a cafeteria too. It should be this beautiful collaborative
atmosphere
where people can create. And why not? SAG-AFTRA should have their own channel, SAG-AFTRA channel. We should be broadcasting. We should be hiring our own members. We should be making our own podcast, our own webisodes, and we should be putting that out, and we should be charging a premium. Who's got the best talent in the world? We do.
I do. I mean, we do.
We do. And we can implement this. This would be awesome. Then you could start generating income to make up for some of the lousy contracts that I believe we have. And believe me, there's enough money that in the commercial business, SAG-AFTRA created a waiver, a low budget waiver for commercials. And what BBH is trying to say is that they can't afford it. That's not true. It's a blatant lie.
Right.
Because we negotiated a small amount. This is something that most members don't understand. If a company's a micro company and you just started up one and you want a talented commercial, well, if you can't really, you can demonstrate that, you should be given a lesser rate. If all of a sudden your market cap comes big, then obviously you're going to go back and pay the normal rate. That's good. But a lot of times, some of the bigger companies will siphon off some small companies, and they may appear not to have it, but they answer to a mother company. Those companies should be paying full rate. But the smaller companies that are all over the web, the mom-and-pop companies that start up, they should be given a break. And SAG-AFTRA properly negotiated them a proper break. And the commercial department has done a great job. I applaud them. I think they've done a great job, a good job negotiating contracts and being proactive at it. So we just have to get everyone on the same page. And the things I've discussed about in the past, they're in the past, just to give you background. So I am working with Gabriel Kateris on our national board and Rebecca Damon from New York and all the people in the stunt business to create a safety. It's a safety referendum, or we want to put a safety issue in our constitution to protect the stunt performers.
Gabrielle was actually in a terrible accident, right? When she started off doing stunt.
Well,
she was in a Back to the Future and she suffered a terrible accident.
I think it was a movie of the week in Canada.
I'm sorry?
I think it was a movie of the week in Canada where she had
a week in Canada.
She was shooting a movie of the week, I think, that she was a lead in.
Oh, in Canada.
Okay. But the thing is that in our contract, we don't even have that it's mandatory to have an ambulance on the set when there's action being performed, which is highway. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
That's absurd. We haven't had it in 30. It's not Gabrielle's fault. It's not anybody.
Yeah.
In this. It's not anybody in the last 10 years' fault. But now we have to start doing it. Now Gabrielle is fighting for safety. Rebecca Damon is fighting. And these are two people that obviously I was campaigning against. But at this point, I have to give all of that up, and we have to find the common ground. The common ground between myself, Rebecca, and Gabrielle at this point, contract enforcement, safety, protecting our residuals, and creating business models that will move us forward. So instead of fighting with them now, I'm not interested in that, giving up, because we can have our position. It's a waste of time.
Right.
So going forward, we're all merged, so we have to do the best we can together to make a difference. So I stand with them in the commercial contracts. I have certain ideas about how to implement contract enforcement and track our residuals, because the SAG-AFTRA needs to be brought into the 21st century, which is one of the platforms I ran on in president when I ran for president, which was we should implement machine learning, artificial intelligence to our computing systems at SAG-AFTRA, because then you could track anybody's performance or anybody's commercial 24 hours a day in real time, including face recognition and voice recognition. Because if you're doing something and they rip you off, they lift footage, they lift your voice, they put it someplace else, you should be getting paid for that.
Mm.
And it should be, instead of the studio saying, well, we owe you this, and there's no auditing done, people don't know that. Unless there's a problem, they have to hire outside auditors. I don't agree with that. There's not enough manpower. I think all the studios should be audited. We should know what their distribution contracts, how much money they sold the films for, so we can get paid proper residuals. They don't do that now.
Oh.
They don't have the manpower to do that. So it's the studio basically says, hey, this is what we earn. Here, you can have this. And that needs to be, mm-hmm. the check SAG doesn't have the manpower to do that. But you start putting these particular artificial intelligence in our system where we can track. Listen, if the NSA could track anything from anyone, as Edward Snowden proved in his PRISM, outing of the PRISM operation, they could track anything anywhere.
That is... They're tracking us right now.
Yeah.
No, just
so
no,
that,
but
that would be smart. True. So if we implement these things and the model changes, these are the things that I have to talk in, and I'm pushing now at SAG-AFTRA, especially the technology, because I am pushing that at a high level, and I also want to push these particular protections in regards to our pension plan so we can enrich them and try to make them even.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and then the other thing is stunt performers should be able to get a full pension at age 55. It's like a professional football player, but they got 5 or 10 years and they beat their body up. But there's people doing this for 30 years and they're crippled up and their body doesn't work and they can't do what they did at 25 to 45 when they're over, 45 to 55 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be able to get a full pension. And whether that means increasing the contribution, there's a lot of ways to do it, or increasing to 30 years, you have to be a 30-year member or a 30-year vested member, which you have to make a certain amount of money for 30 years and you qualify. There's got to be some common ground. We're working on it because these people should be protected. However, we need to take protections and financial models. We need to improve them to protect all members' pension at this point, because I don't trust a 78% fund, and our contracts aren't that good. The new media contracts, blatantly, in plain English, they suck. And the bottom line is there's more work all over New York, all the Marvel films, all the Netflix stuffs. I mean, it's like the commercial company BBH. They want the same model as Netflix.
It's like, you know, it's like when they first did regional commercials, you could do a regional commercial. They got to pay $1,800 and they can run it 1,000 times.
Mm.
If they ran your commercial 1,000 times, it was a network natural, you'd make $50,000. Nah, not now.
Not now.
Not now. So there's so many markets, and I think that our economists have to up the game. And there's two ways that we need to do that. We need to do it with better technology, as I've discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And then we need to do it with contract enforcement. And I haven't touched a lot upon that, but
okay.
And we need to do it by better collection of residuals, which comes under the heading of contract enforcement.
Okay.
But our contracts, since we become a global or a U.S. business, but a global business, when you have performers working under your contract, flying themselves on their own dime to different states all the time, that gives our work away, because I never had to do that. In the contract states, they have to fly you if you want to go somewhere to work. But everyone's working as locals all over the country. That takes work from everyone that abides by their contract in their state. So I'm also advising, I made a motion that you can only have 2 locals. In other words, hi, I'm John Smith, and my local is New York and Atlanta. Great. Mm-hmm. So you can work as a local in New York and Atlanta. And New York should be made special, because the New York local should probably include Jersey and Philly.
Okay.
And Boston. Because they're, you know, a couple-hour train ride, and you know, but they should still, you know, pay for travel. There should be a special arrangement worked out for them, because it's not fair, because some people live a half hour out of New York and they're not in the state. That's not fair.
Well, I don't think anyone can blame you for trying to run for something that, you know, where you're standing for better equality and trying to improve certain things within the union. That's always a good thing. What I do believe is, you know, whatever, because there are always loopholes in the system, and this is from top to bottom. You know, you see it everywhere. But I really believe, you know, whatever obstacle there is, where there's a will, there's a way, and you can always overcome that. You know, if this you're in SAG-AFTRA, it's because you see a vision and you have the talent, like you said. And for myself personally, I feel like, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, whatever the issue may be, it's not that big of a problem for myself personally, because you got to have that go-getter attitude and have that strong belief in yourself. I believe that it's more for, you know, it's when people start reaching stardom, it's mainly comprised of energy, something, you know, other than something logical, like, okay, I want to get my pension and I want to do this. But there are still issues with that, like you just mentioned, and you explained that very, very well. But because I feel like sometimes I've spoken to several aspiring actors and also that are in SAG-AFTRA, and I think they kind of see it as a one-dimensional issue, and they kind of, you know, sway away from the union because of it.
Well, let me say that I'm a real unionist, and you know, and obviously that in the past I've not liked how the operations work. But let me tell you something: if it wasn't for this union, I made a phenomenal living, traveled all over the world, great health care. I have a very good pension. I should be getting double pension, in my opinion.
Right, right.
But I mean, it protects you.
Exactly.
And if it wasn't for this union, I wouldn't have made the living and met some of the most beautiful people in the world and was protected. Yeah, there's problems, like there is problems with everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, without this, I mean, you took it for granted. I've been doing this since I'm 19, 20. So, I mean, and I've qualified for a pension credit every year. I've had health care every year. And you used to take that for granted because I just came out of college and started doing this, right? Mm-hmm. So, but it's still, a blessing to do that. But right now, there's a very tenuous time in this country because there's an anti-union movement. People are trying to break it. There's right to work states. And you know what I want to say to everyone that doesn't understand how it works, you know, being a part of SAG-AFTRA kind of makes you miserable. If you're a real member, listen, there's nobody that hasn't made a big living that's not a SAG-AFTRA member.
There's nobody, you're not going to see one big leading name on television or film that's not a SAG-AFTRA member.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, well, piss on the union. I'm in Atlanta. I don't want to join. It's not worth it. I'm going to say, if you really want to get into the game, you're not going to be, if you're going to get into the bigger parts and you're going to need to stay, do a few things in Atlanta, then you're going to need to move to LA or New York and you're going to have to join the union. Mm-hmm. You know, someday try to avoid it at some points. But when the union will continue to organize and continue to protect their members and with this contract enforcement, I believe they're going to attract a lot more people that are going to want to sign up and join. And my big thing is that it's got to be done with kindness and ethics and principles,
right,
and not based upon emotion and reaction, because the reactionary mind is like what they do on social media. Some side puts up, oh, Trump did this, and the other one goes, well, the Democrats and Clinton did this, and half of them are like, ah, piss off, and the other half are, ah, piss off. So both sides, their energy is getting sucked out of them,
right,
with anger.
Exactly.
So you keep both parties talking about it. How can they then still their mind, turn their eyes on the inside, and really get connected to their own hearts to really figure out what's happening?
And this is something we've discussed this program before, where there's just so much anger on both sides instead of just being positive about it. Like I was just
open-minded.
Stating, just being positive and listen, whatever, you know, no president, whoever is in charge, whoever is in charge of anything. I mean, you know, if you hate your boss, whatever. But I can't remember a time when my life got better because of whoever was in office. You know, life is what you make it, and that's just the point I was trying to make. But I know you wanted to go ahead and talk about the Amazon and what you're doing with that.
This is the most important issue on the planet today.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
And what's happening is...
You got 20 seconds.
Perfect.
No, I'm just kidding. No, you got a couple minutes.
What's happening in the Amazon? The Amazon, how it works... First of all, it's the lungs of the planet, and this is science can be researched. This isn't any political. This is all spiritual, and it's about Mother Earth, and it's science. And this is not climate change. It's got to be there's a difference. Climate change, they talk about carbon footprints, but the ecosystem. So if I cut out a half or a quarter of your lungs, it would be hard for you to breathe.
Correct.
Okay, so the Amazon is responsible for over 20% of the oxygen on the planet. The Atlantic Ocean provides precipitation. The living, breathing organism called the Amazon rainforest breathes and takes all of this precipitation and sweats. And when it sweats, it throws off flying atmospheric rivers that were miles and miles and miles wide. With the continuation of deforestation, and a lot of it's a football field or more a minute now. It's really ridiculous because the trees aren't rooted deep in the ground. Their roots are spread out and they're more shallow. And the flying rivers are getting thinner and thinner and thinner. If they ever become extinct, the human race will not be able to survive within the next 100 years.
Right.
And it's that serious. And now there's a president, Bolsonaro, candidate in Brazil, who's threatening and in the press said his intention was to potentially develop the rainforest, like put a paved road through it and develop it. This would be a death sentence to the human race. And right now there's only, I think science says in between 11 and 13 years, we have to reverse this. So not only do we have to stop deforestation, we have to then start planting of trees, because like how our leaders in the world, have they no respect, or has humanity have no respect for creation, the divinity of creation? Because if you ever go outside, everything that you have is a function of the gifts from Mother Earth, the food, the water, the microphone you're speaking into, the cars you have, the mansions that these billionaires have, every house, every piece of wood, every tree, everything on this planet is a gift from Mother Earth, and yet we desecrate it.
Right.
We destroy the oceans. We destroy the air. We destroy the forest. And in the divinity, if people don't think there's a divine force, well, how does a swarm of bees make honeycomb? How is that sacred geometry
so perfect.
Right.
How about a flower, the golden bee?
Does a bumblebee fly?
How does a bumblebee fly?
They're not supposed to fly.
How do the birds know to migrate certain times of the year? How does the incredible science of nature and this ecosystem work?
Right.
If people think it's by accident,
no, it's not.
They're too tuned in to Facebook and social media, because when I talked about the reactionary mind,
right.
All of a sudden people don't like something and they're just talking about it nonstop. How can he do this? He do that. If they stopped and got off that and started turning their eyes on the inside, meditated, you would find that there are things that are infinitely more important, like the rainforest and the protection of children. Look at the Vatican came out after all these years and said they got busted, and yet they all should be arrested. And in the news in Italy, they had cardinals in penthouses with parties with cocaine and male and female prostitutes.
Yeah.
So, and that's supposed to be the Vatican. That's supposed to be, you're telling me that's a holy place and that's supposed to be of God.
Yeah.
There's definitely
an illusion.
People that have infiltrated, because religion at its root, it is love, but there are things that, you know, they've been infiltrated.
Right.
Because when there's a system composed of people, there's going to be those that want to just desecrate it.
Right.
Well, I would propose,
especially something as holy and beautiful.
I hate to cut this short. I'm really fascinated, but we're out of that time.
We're out of time, unfortunately.
But we will continue. Would you like to come back and we can continue another?
Sure.
Continue more?
Sure. Lastly, love is the question and the answer.
Exactly.
And the answer.
Amen.
And the answer. So turn your eyes on the inside and get connected with your heart, because the power lies in the collective consciousness of all humanity.
All right. Thank you very
much
for
listening.
Pete and
Tico, everyone. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you for coming, Pete. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for listening to The Strange Chameleon Show.
Have a strange night and have strange dreams.
Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.